Thanks, Joy. Good morning. How are we doing today?
Good.
Yeah? A little sleepy? The rain? No? All right. Well, when I was growing up, I was called a leader for as long as I can remember. When I was in elementary school, my teachers would tell my parents, Mitch is a leader. Some of them meant it as a good thing, and some of them thought it was not a great thing. But even when I was in high school, I was a captain of my football team. I was a youth leader in the youth group, and actually my youth pastor is here today. He's also my dad. Yeah. Roger and Cindy are here. In our house, we know them as Grandma and Grandpa, so they're here. They're excited to be here, and we're happy to have them. But these are two of the people that you can blame them for kind of encouraging me to be a leader in my life. But I'm so grateful for them because from the time that I was young, they also led me to Jesus, and I think that's what good leadership is about. But if you ask me when I was a kid what a good leader was, I thought that it was just someone worth following. And so if you had lots of followers, that meant you were a good leader. By that metric, these people are the greatest leaders in the world. Okay, according to BBC, these are the most followed people in the world. Okay, Cristiano Ronaldo, 1 billion followers. Okay, this is like not just one social media account, this is across all of them, so I think it's probably some duplicates, probably not very scientific, but I don't know, what do you guys think? Is Cristiano Ronaldo the greatest leader of our generation? Is he the greatest leader in the world today? No? Okay. No, it's Messi. Okay. I don't think that we would call these people leaders. We call them influencers, right? We call them influencers because they're not really leaders. They just influence us. We like what they have to say. That's why they have so many followers. And if you had asked me as a kid, I would have actually said, probably if you dug down, what I really wanted was to be influential. What I really wanted, what I thought leadership was that you have lots of good things to say that people like to hear. You're a really great public speaker, and you're just excellent at what you do. And by that metric, I don't know about public speaking, but a lot of these people are definitely influential. But by that metric, that makes Moses, our big Mo in our series right now, a pretty bad leader, okay? At this point, in Numbers, they just conducted a census and they counted 600,000 men over the age of 20 who are of fighting age. We can take that down. We don't have to look at their faces anymore. 600,000 men, which means that the number of Israelites in the desert at this point in time is probably around 2.5 million people. I'm just here, like, my iPad was almost dead this morning, so I'm just, we're just going no notes, I guess. I might pull up my computer in a second, because we'll see. I don't want to get lost, but, so 2.5 million people. Okay, which is a drop in the bucket compared to Cristiano Ronaldo. And these 2.5 million people, they were starting to not really feel Moses. Okay, if Facebook and Instagram were a thing back then, they were like complaining and kind of complaining on all the comments section was just like, oh, this guy, we're ready to get rid of him, unsubscribe, unfollow. Okay, but is Moses the problem? Okay, if you remember last week, if you were here last week, we saw that actually it wasn't that the problem was Moses. It was that the problem was the people's hearts. Psalm 106, if we have it here, yeah, says this, then they believed his works. This is talking not about Moses. This is actually talking about God. Because the problem wasn't that they were tired of Moses. The problem was that they were ready to throw God out the window and go back to Egypt. They had come across the Red Sea, and it says, then, after the Red Sea, and after all the plagues and all the miracles, they believed his words, they sang his praise, but they soon forgot his works. They did not wait for his counsel, but they had a wanton craving in the desert. And they put God to the test. And they put God to the test. He gave them what they asked, but he sent a wasting disease among them. And so we see that actually the problem was not that Israel, was not that Moses was actually failing as a leader, that Moses wasn't worth following. The problem was actually that these people had these wanton cravings, not wonton cravings, although wontons are delicious. Okay, their cravings were out of control, and they were so out of control that they were ready to go back and be slaves in Egypt if it meant that they didn't have to eat manna anymore, this miracle from God. They had rejected God. Friends, our problem is no different than the Israelites' problem. Our problem is no different. Actually, it's not that we have bad leaders, although sometimes we have bad leaders. Actually, our problem, the thing that God is after, is our hearts being satisfied in him. And that's what godly leadership is for. So today, as we said in Rachel and Timor as deacons, and as we kind of look at what it means to be a leader in God's family, there's three things, okay, that I want us to see. And so when we look at this passage, Moses starts complaining to God. The Israelites complain, and then Moses complains to God. We talked about this a little bit in our life group this week, how different they are, though. Because the Israelites are complaining kind of just out loud in God's hearing, but Moses goes to God and says, God, why are you treating me like this? Let me die, right? Actually, Moses says, I'm ready to just die. Just let me, I can't handle this burden anymore. I would rather just be dead. Can you kill me now, God? Right? And it's like, whoa, a bit dramatic, Moses. But we actually need to realize that Moses wasn't completely alone in his leadership. He had actually established all of these leaders in Exodus with Jethro, that there were these judges that were handling the burden. It wasn't just administrative burden that Moses was talking about. He had administrative help. It was there. What he was really burdened by was the spiritual weight of these people's hearts that would not come to God. He felt alone in going to God and knowing God, and he's saying, Lord, can you help me? And so that's what we see in this passage. Okay, so we're going to read in Numbers chapter 11. If you want to open your Bibles, we'll be there. Otherwise, it's on the screen. I'm going to read from the ESV. Numbers chapter 11, verses 16 to 20, we'll start, but we're going to go all the way down to verse 29 today. Then the Lord said to Moses, gather for me 70 of the elders of Israel, whom you know to be elders of the people and officers over them. Bring them to the tent of meeting and let them take their stand there with you. And I will come down and talk with you there. And I will take some of the spirit that is on you and put it on them. And they shall bear the burden of the people with you, so that you may not bear it yourself alone. And say to the people, consecrate yourselves, for tomorrow you shall eat meat. And you have wept in the hearing of the Lord, saying, who will give us meat to eat? For it was better for us in Egypt. Therefore, the Lord will give you meat, and you shall eat. You shall not eat just one day, or 2 days, or 5 days, or 10 days, or 20 days, but a whole month, until it comes out your nostrils and it becomes loathsome to you, because you have rejected the Lord who is among you, and have wept before him, saying, why did we come out of Egypt? It's a good thing that Israel was not a democracy. Okay? I'm a history teacher, okay, this year, and for a few years I've been teaching about kind of the Enlightenment and how democracy is this thing that gives the rights to the people to choose their leaders. Now, if that were the case, then Israel would be in deep doo-doo, okay, to put it nicely, okay? Democracy is a nice thing, especially in the world. I think it can be a good thing, but in the kingdom of God, it is not a democracy. Not even Moses here is going around saying, here, let me choose. And it's not like Moses goes and he says, I dub thee to be of the office of one of the anointed elders of Israel. You shall have my spirit. And they get to have this title and rank along with Moses. Moses isn't raising them up. God tells Moses, bring them to me. And this is what we see, is that in God's family, godly leaders are God-appointed. They're appointed by God. We say this about Timor and Rachel. It's not like we're just like, oh man, we're just struggling here. We just need some help. Hey, can you guys help us? We'll make it a really nice package for you guys. It's a really great blessing, right? It wasn't that all the people were like, Rachel and G. Moore, down with the old, in with the new, okay? No, actually, we see that there's leadership on them. And why do we lay hands? Why do we bring them here? It's because actually there's a God appointing, a God anointing that takes place in his family. And what does this mean? It means that ultimately leaders in God's family don't answer to the people, but they answer to God. And this is why we see in Hebrews chapter 13, 17, you can skip Acts, go to Hebrews 13, 17. It says, obey your leaders and submit to them, for they are keeping watch over your souls as those who will have to give an account. Let them do this with joy and not with groaning, for that would be of no advantage to you. Now, for us in here who have been under bad leaders, who have been under leaders who actually, they didn't act like they were going to be accountable to God. They led like they were given this authority from the people because they were chosen. I think we all know that that's a pretty dangerous place to be under leadership that has that sense of entitlement. I won't name names, but I think you could probably think of plenty of world leaders that act like that. Now, if you've ever found yourself under that, you know that that those leaders, like I said earlier, like I was on a track to be, which was just actually all they want, all I wanted was to be influential. I just wanted to have a greater number of followers. And if you don't want to follow me, fine, I'll find someone else that does. It doesn't matter what happens to you. I'm going somewhere, follow me. But that's not what Moses is doing. That's not what the church is. It's God's kingdom. Godly leaders are accountable to him, and they will give an answer to him, whether they know it or not. And so if you are someone who has been hurt by leaders in the past, I just want to encourage you not to carry it, not to carry bitterness against them, because actually it doesn't help to fix their situation. It only actually affects your heart. You can actually release the bitterness and release what had happened to you because you know that one day they're going to have to give an account to God, and God is a righteous judge. You don't have to carry it. You don't have to carry the burden. God will deal with them. And actually, like Dan said, we're not a perfect church. Actually, we're not perfect leaders also. And what Paul is saying here is not, hey, your leaders are perfect, so obey them. No, he's saying they have to give an account. So have a little grace, but also recognize that it's not beneficial to you by making their job harder and complaining. It had Israel come to Moses and actually allowed Moses to speak to them, right? Allowed Moses to be like, hey, remember in Egypt, you want to go back to some slaves, right? But they wouldn't listen to him, and they're just like, oh, Egypt is it? Actually, leaders are there to actually get the idols out of our hearts. And it's not because they're perfect, okay? It's because they are going to give an account to God. And if you are someone who actually aspires to be a leader, if you're someone who thinks that actually, you know what, I think I would like to be a deacon one day, I think I would like to be a pastor one day, or I feel like God is calling me to this thing, I just want to encourage you in that a great place to start is by serving. A great place to start is by serving, because actually that is what leadership is. Because it's not about how great you are and how many credentials you have. Actually, in God's family, point number two, leaders are God-equipped, okay? Leaders are God-equipped. In Numbers 11, 25, it says, then the Lord came down in the cloud and spoke to him and took some of the spirit that was on him and put it on the 70 elders. And as soon as the spirit rested on them, they prophesied. They prophesied. That's something they'd never done before. It wasn't like, hey, Moses, we need some prophets here. Let's find some people that are as good as you. If they were looking for someone that was as qualified as Moses to lead, as experienced as Moses, they did not exist, okay? Now imagine for me, or with me for a second, that God told Moses, hey, we need more leaders like you, but we're not going to go back to Egypt and do that whole thing again just to make sure they have the same experience as you. So I've got an idea. We're going to put these posters all around the camp. Okay, we can't have them the same experience, but let's get them some qualifications, okay? We need leaders. Can I have that slide? Yeah? Yeah? Okay. We need leaders. Okay? We're hiring. Okay? Send this out to all the camp. Okay? We need an MDiv, a minimum 6 years experience. Okay? We can't just have these riffraff come out here and saying they're leaders, but actually they don't have the experience. We're going to check their credentials. Okay? They need to be experts in Mosesology, which right now is just three books of the Bible. Okay? We're still working on book number four. Okay? Why not give them some expertise in our Hebrew language, but also I think Egyptian hieroglyphics would be beneficial while we're at it, okay? The job description is simple, okay? It means shepherding people, not sheep, okay? Interceding during plagues, that's important. That happens a lot. Seeking God's face, and counseling people with wanton cravings, okay? Send your applications to Joshua. He'll handle it. Can you imagine if that was what happened, okay? None of the leaders would have been qualified, okay? So then what do? Well, I'm not qualified. I don't have the qualifications. Let's go to the nearest school, which happens to be in Egypt, okay? But they're going to go, and they're going to study, and they're going to, after 5 years, come back, and they're going to get an internship with Moses, and we'll see kind of who the best are. That's not what happens. Why do we have this tradition, okay? It's not in here. It is not in here. I have been asked about One Light Church, so where do your pastors go to seminary? And I just say, why do your pastors go to seminary? Now, I understand. I think that knowing the Bible is important. That is one of the qualifications of being an elder. You have to be able to teach. But since when did being able to teach mean getting a credential from a human institution that is not commanded in the Bible? The way that leaders are raised up in the Bible is in God's family. Do you know what seminary means? It means seed plot. Guess what? The church is God's seminary. He is raising up leaders in his church that are growing into the leaders. We don't look outside of Israel. We don't send God's people somewhere else outside of the family of God to be trained to come back and lead the family of God. It doesn't make sense. Sitting in a classroom doesn't prepare you to shepherd hearts. God's Spirit prepares you to shepherd hearts. God equips his leaders, not with things made by man and instituted by man, but with the power of God, the same power that rose Jesus Christ from the dead. That's the power that we need godly leaders to have. What do you guys think? I just think in this part of the world, as we're wanting to see churches planted and leaders raised up that are going to lead the next generation, are we counseling them to go to Bible school and then they'll be qualified? And this is something we deal with as a leadership team. And I will continue saying this, that actually it is not our credentials that qualify us. It is that God is in it. And we recognize this and we practice it. And we want to continue moving against actually this other idea that we need to go and find our qualifications and be prepared somewhere else, that it's God who prepares. You've probably heard this. Hey, have you guys heard this? God doesn't call the equipped, he... Okay, you guys have heard it. All right. God doesn't call the equipped, he equips the called. Okay? We believe that. We practice that. I want to say to you as well, God does call the equipped, often though, to do things they feel particularly not equipped to do. At least that's my experience, right? Oftentimes I feel like God's calling me into something that I'm like, well, I've never done that before. And it's not relying on my strength. Actually, that is what I've found to be the worst and most stressful thing to do. Actually, it is just relying on the call of God and the assurance of actually leaders. Leaders that speak into my life saying, rely on the Spirit of God, not your own strength, that I'm able to say, okay, you said it, so I'll trust that. Actually, and what they're doing when they do that is they're shepherding my heart away from these idols, which is actually to rely on my own strength and to a greater dependence on God. And what a gift that is. I had a friend from Coastlands, Beanie, Pastor Beanie, messaged me last month, and he was preparing for their sermon series in Corinthians, 2 Corinthians, and he said he had this thing that just stuck out to him, and I don't know why he felt the need to share it with me, probably God's Spirit, but he messaged me, and he just said, if dependence is the goal, then actually stepping into something you've never done before is not a scary thing, but a blessing, because it's leading you to greater dependence on God. And I think, like, why do we have these things where we set up these structures of this is how you become a leader? And I think it's because God's goals are different than ours. God's goals are different than ours. He calls people who are not yet equipped, but he equips them. He equips us. He equips us. Why? How? What is he doing? This is the last thing. Okay, in God's family, leaders are God-directed. I'm not as smart as Dan and Luke, okay? I'm bad at coming up with alliterations, okay? So I just hyphenate everything with God, and I think it sounds good, okay? God's leaders are God-appointed. God's leaders are God-equipped. And lastly, God's leaders are God-directed, okay? In verse 26, we see, now two men remained in the camp. Two dads, okay? One named Eldad and the other one named Medad. And the Spirit rested on them. They were among those registered, but they had not gone out to the tent. That is the tent of meeting. So they prophesied in the camp. And a young man ran and told Moses, Eldad and Medad are prophesying in the camp. And Joshua, the son of Nun, the assistant of Moses from his youth, said, my Lord, Moses, stop them. But Moses said to him, are you jealous for my sake? Would that all the Lord's people were prophets, that the Lord would put his Spirit on them. Now, I guess these two dads are Spanish dads, Eldad and Medad. I don't know. When I wrote that, I heard Hannah say that in my head. So that was like... We don't know why they're not at the tent, okay? Maybe they didn't get Mo's memo, okay? Maybe they knew the start time, but they were ordering their lattes downstairs and coming late to the tent. Oh, just kidding, okay. Love you guys. is that too fresh? Okay. No, I'm teasing. We love you, okay? I know your coffee is important, okay? But I am going to start praying that if you come late, that you start prophesying downstairs on your way up here, okay? Get slain in the Spirit, okay? No, God doesn't wait for us to be ready. He doesn't wait for us to get there, actually. God is gracious, okay? And he's on the move. And he met them, and they started prophesying in the camp. And we see Joshua, right? Good old Joshua, faithful Joshua. He comes to Moses, and he's like, hey, stop that. And you can almost feel like Joshua's fearful that it's challenging Moses' authority. Like, Moses is going to lose some of his authority. But Moses has spent so much time with God face to face that Moses knows God's heart. Moses actually knows that this is not a challenge to his authority. Actually, this is what God is after. This is why God brought Moses and brought God's people out of Egypt, out of the wilderness. What was it all for? Actually, it was to bring God's people to himself. Prophesying is actually coming to God and knowing him and having God speak to us and through us. Paul actually reminds us of Moses' heart, right? Paul says this, the same thing Moses speaks. It's like an echo, where in 1 Corinthians 14, Paul says, the one who speaks in tongues builds up himself, but the one who prophesies builds up the church, builds up God's body, builds up God's people. Now, I want you all to speak in tongues. Paul loves it. It's great for me. I've gotten close to God. I find intimacy with God when I speak in tongues. It edifies me. But even more, I want you all to prophesy. We don't know what kind of prophesying is being done in this chapter in Numbers when the elders are anointed or appointed. We don't know exactly what they said. We don't know if it was just kind of like tongues. Some people think it was kind of frantic utterances. Okay, we see it again with Saul, and Saul starts prophesying, and they say, "Is Saul one of the prophets?" We don't really know what's going on there. Okay, but we do know that it stopped. We just get this kind of sad verse at the end, and it says, "But they did not continue," and it stopped there. And there's just this longing as we read it. Moses is like, "I wish they would all prophesy." And you hear that and you're like, well, not only did they not all prophesy, but the ones who did stopped. But in Acts chapter 2, the day of Pentecost, this longing of Moses, this longing of God is fulfilled. Peter declared the vision of Joel, and he said, "This is what was uttered through the prophet Joel." And he says, "In the last days it shall be, God declares, that I will pour out my spirit on all flesh. Your sons and your daughters shall prophesy. Your young men shall see visions, and your old men shall dream dreams. Even on my male servants and my female servants, in those days I will pour out my spirit, and they shall prophesy." For those of you that have grown up in traditions that maybe don't practice prophecy, which I think might be quite a few of us, based on conversations I've had. Maybe those of you that have as well, I think it's worth asking, what is prophecy? What do we mean when we're saying that everyone's going to prophesy? What is the purpose of it? What's it for? But Revelation chapter 19, verse 10 tells us, it says, "The testimony of Jesus is the spirit of prophecy." Just that last part. Okay, the testimony of Jesus is the spirit of prophecy. So, what were they saying? Why did God cause these 70 elders to prophesy? And I think we get to the heart of the question when we realize that all prophecy testifies about Jesus. They probably didn't even know what they were saying. I think so much of the prophets, when we read them, we can understand why actually the Israelites probably didn't think like, oh, there's going to be a guy named Jesus and he's going to come. Like when they met Jesus, they just didn't really get it. And it took actually the Spirit of God helping us to understand the words and the prophecies of God to Jesus is the centerpiece that actually helps us to understand what it's all about. In other words, why is Israel coming out of Egypt? Why is God giving leaders to help Moses? What is the purpose of where they're going? It's all leading to Jesus. It's our destination. It's our purpose. He is our goal. He is our prize. He is our portion. He is our end. Why do we prophesy? It's so that we can know him. It's so that we can see what he's doing and actually align ourselves with that instead of seeing all the things that we see with our eyes around ourselves and being distracted and going after those things, remembering our wants and cravings from our former life and wanting to just go back to that and say, that was better, right? And actually, godly leaders and prophecy are the things that lead us back to the heart of God and say, no, it wasn't better. Let me show you the best thing. It's Jesus. Are you satisfied in him? Friends, are you satisfied in him today? I'm going to ask the band to come up. When I think of Moses crying out in the wilderness to God, I can't bear the burden alone. I can't bear the burden. I think of Jesus in the Garden of Eden, who cried out to God and said, Lord, this burden, Father, take this cup from me. The burden was too much for Jesus to bear. But he doesn't just say, if you won't kill me at once. Actually, he knew that the burden would mean his death. He wanted to be spared from the burden, but he was so obedient to the Father, and he knew the plan. And he said, not my will, but your will be done. And actually, Jesus is a better Moses because he was willing to be crushed. And he was crushed. He was crushed by the weight of our sin, by the weight of our longing hearts that are unsatisfied with God. You could say that the story of the Bible is a story of God's people being unsatisfied in him, and God's plan working forward to the point where finally their eyes will be opened and they will see how good and how pleasant and how wonderful and satisfying God is. Are you satisfied in him today? If you feel like this morning you come and you're wounded, you feel like you've been hurt, and you're like, I don't know if I can trust God again. I don't know if I can trust that actually these leaders are going to help me and actually bring healing in my life. I don't know if I stay with this church, actually, if it will be good for me. And we just have this invitation. Come, walk with us as we follow Jesus. It's not, Paul doesn't say, come follow me because I'm better. No, he says, I am the chief of sinners. Follow me as I follow Christ. Not because we're perfect, not because you're perfect, but because Jesus is perfect and we're following him. And by his wounds, we are healed. Let me pray and we'll go into worship. Jesus, we need you. We long for more of you. You are the one we long for. Even when our hearts move astray, even when our hearts go for things, actually, nothing can satisfy other than you. So Jesus, I ask this morning that you would pour out your Spirit afresh. We need you. We need you. Not just the leaders. Would that all God's people would prophesy so that we can come near to you and meet with you face to face. I pray for those this morning that have been hurt by past leaders. I pray that you, by your Spirit, would bring healing. I pray that you would speak to them gentle words that give life, that can heal their wounds, that remind them of the sacrifice of Jesus, our Savior. Draw us back to you, Lord. Draw us back to yourself. It's why you rescued us. It's why you rescued Israel out of Egypt. It's why you gave us all this testimony of Moses that we can be shaped and transformed into the likeness, not just to know you, but to be like you, Jesus. You are our heart's desire. Come and make us anew in Jesus' name. Thank you.